Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Main Menu, ACB Radio's look at technology from a blind perspective. This week, in the first hour, we have Jim Fruchterman from Benetech on. He will talk with us all about Bookshare.org and other Benetech projects from a blindness perspective. In the second hour, Darcy and Holly will come on with us and tell us all about the new Apple Air Macintosh laptop computer. So, Jim, it's a pleasure to have you on. I've been wanting to do this for a while, so good evening. And how are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing just great. The sun is still setting here in California, and I'm glad to be back on ACB Radio.
Wonderful. Jim, of course, you know, since we're going to talk mostly about Bookshare.org, but I'd like to talk about a few other things, too, at some point, but... if you could start out for me, let us describe to all of our listeners, some of whom may not yet know about Bookshare, or perhaps maybe they know about it but don't fully understand it and how it works. Give us a little bit of an introduction to Benetech and then to Bookshare.org specifically.
Okay, so Benetech is a 19-year-old nonprofit organization based in California's Silicon Valley. And our goal is to make sure the technology fully benefits humanity. The reason that we came about is because I co-founded an optical character recognition company that for many years was the major competitor to Ray Kurzweil's OCR company, which he sold to Xerox. And we had wanted to do a reading machine for the blind. Our investors poo-pooed the idea because they heard from us that Kurzweil was selling about $1 million a year, and they found that wasn't very interesting. And so I ended up setting up Arkenstone, which was a nonprofit high-tech company to make reading machines for the blind. And so we made products like the Arkenstone Reader, Open Book, Win, Vera, Sarah, things like, so basically all reading machine products. And in 2000, we sold the reading machine for the blind business to the entity that became Freedom Scientific when they bought Henner Joyce and Blazy and put those three companies together. And with the resulting money, we got to do new things in other areas, and now we're up to basically five projects in different areas of applying technology to social causes that a for-profit company might not actually go for. And the largest of those projects is Bookshare. And Bookshare.org came about because as we were selling Arkenstone to Freedom Scientific, my teenage son, Jimmy, who was 14 at the time, installed some new software on my home computer. And I came home one day and said, "What's this new icon?" And Jimmy says, "Oh, that's Napster, Dad. It's really cool. It's all about music." I said, "Oh, well, how does it work?" So my son and I spent an hour listening to music. And this is kind of extraordinary because, you know, he was a 14-year-old boy, and I could never get him to spend an hour with his dad. So at the end of this hour where he was playing, you know, 90s punk, and I was playing Pat Benatar from the 70s. Oh, we had stuff like that too, son. You know, I asked Jimmy, I said, "So how much are we paying for this?" And he said, "Paying?" And I went, "Oh, my God, this is totally illegal." But it is so cool. Yeah. So, you know, what I thought is, wow, could this really cool peer-to-peer kind of technology be used to help blind people? And, of course, at that time I had 40,000 people using Arkenstone, you know, reading products, scanning in books. And I knew that the last thing anyone wanted to do if they had an option was to sit down and spend 3 hours scanning a book. So I went to my lawyer and I said, you know, "Hey, I've got this idea of basically using, you know, a Napster-style approach to book sharing so that people could only share the book once." And he did a little bit of legal research, and it turns out that there's this thing called the Chafee Amendment that's in the basic copyright law of the United States, and it made something like this perfectly legal. And so that was just this great moment where, you know, it almost never happens that someone made a law tailor-made for a completely new technology application, you know, and the Chafee Amendment had been passed, I don't know, 4 years before. So anyway, we just got really lucky, and so we set up Bookshare, and I'll be glad to tell you more about it, but just wanted to, you know, pause there for a second and see if I kind of covered the history part.
Certainly, and I know that the Bookshare, the law under which the Bookshare.org project operates has traditionally meant that it's mostly for U.S. listeners or U.S. readers, so we can come to that. But thanks for covering the history. If anyone would like to get a hold of us tonight, you can do so in three ways. One, you may call us at 866-400-5333, 866-400-5333, or you can email or MSN mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. And we'll let Jim describe a little bit more about Bookshare.org, and we will be opening the phone lines for all of you shortly. So ready to go. So go ahead, Jim.
So our shorthand description of Bookshare.org is that it's Amazon.com meets Napster meets Talking Books of the Blind, but legal.
Yeah.
And each of those points is important. So the Amazon.com part is this is a completely virtual experience. You go, you type in, like you would in Amazon.com, a keyword like Clancy, and up will pop, you know, 40 or 50 books by Tom Clancy or about, you know, with Clancy in the title or something like that. The second thing is the Napster angle is that the books on Bookshare, 90%+ of the books on Bookshare are there because probably a visually impaired person chose to scan it and share it with the rest of the community. More than 90% of our books are there because of volunteer efforts. The majority of our volunteers are people with disabilities. And, you know, this is the first digital library for the blind that has been mainly created by the blind for each other. We don't see ourselves as these professional librarians that make choices about what books blind people would want to read. We basically say that as long as it's legal and someone put the effort into it, we want to be able to add the book to the collection. And that's another key portion of this, is that because it's so inexpensive to add one more book if you have volunteer labor doing it, and because it's all digital, you know, we don't get rid of books because we run out of shelf space. We just keep adding books. And if you think a book was worth you scanning and proofreading, we'll take it. The next part is Talking Books to the Blind. We're actually not a traditional Talking Books to the Blind provider. And a traditional Talking Books to the Blind is doing human-narrated audio. So you have either a volunteer or a professional narrator who speaks what's in the book and, you know, conveys it through an audio mechanism that then gets distributed on audio cassette tape or an MP3 file or a CD or whatever it might be. The books in Bookshare are all text, and they're text just like a word processor file or like a web page. And actually, the closest thing that the Bookshare Daisy books are to is like a web page. You can actually take a Bookshare book that you download in this Daisy format, open it into a browser, Internet Explorer, or Firefox, or one of the many others, and it will just work. All the text will be there. But text has got its pros and its cons. The pros are you can turn text into audio, you can rip it to an MP3 file and stick it on an MP3 player, you can enlarge it on the screen, you can print out large print, you can put it into a Braille display or a Braille note taker, you can print it out in Braille, or you can do multiple things. And so we're really excited about the flexibility the text gives. The downside is it's not human narrated audio, and it's not going to sound like a professional NLS narrator, you know, or an Audible.com narrator that you're actually getting a performance of the book read by someone who's skilled and able to do that. Instead, you get the text, but because our production costs, being mainly volunteer-based, allows us to do so many books for so little money, you know, Bookshare is rocketing sort of past all the other traditional approaches to doing these books and has far greater coverage of the latest books, and I'll talk more about sort of that expansion. And then the last part, but legal, is also key. Though it was Napster inspired, which, you know, did not win their court case, we actually went to the publishing industry a year before launching this, explained how we were going to protect the publisher's interests while preserving the flexibility of our users to actually use the books they want, the way they want to read, when they want to read. And showing up a year early gave the publisher some time to digest this concept of something that sounded like Napster for books. And actually, the original name for the project was Bookster, but George Kircher of RFB&D talked me out of that, and I'm very glad he did before we went to the publishers. So those are sort of the key components of Bookshare.org, and I could talk about the first 6 years of Bookshare.org next if you want me to, or go into some other direction.
All right, well, we don't have any MSN messages or anything yet, but again, everyone, if you'd like to get a hold of us, add mainmenu@acbradio.org to your MSN Windows Live Messenger contact list, or call 866-400-5333, and we'll continue here, and we'll go ahead and open the lines, and if anyone would like to call, you may go ahead and interject, and Jim will be happy to answer your questions. Let's talk a little bit about the first 6 years, because as we know, or as some of us know anyway, Bookshare is now six. It just recently celebrated its sixth birthday, and I could certainly, as a user of Bookshare and as a, you know, kind of a real part-time volunteer, I've done a little bit of scanning and a little bit more validating. I could talk all about Bookshare, but let's go ahead and turn it back over to you there, Jim, and talk about the 6 years of Bookshare, and then let's get into kind of how the you know, the formats that the books are in. Mm-hmm. We've already talked about DAISY a little bit, so we can talk. You mentioned a little bit about BRF, and then maybe get into the volunteer process and how that works.
So basically, to become a Bookshare member, you have to subscribe,
right?
And there are just a few key requirements. You know, one, there's actually three key requirements. One is you have to sign up and you have to agree to our member agreement. And our member agreement is 3 or 4 pages long of legalese, but the net is, thou shalt not share with other people, this is just for you. And that's part of the deal, is that we're giving you the file in an unlocked form. So we're trusting you not to post it on the internet. And so we really do put a lot of emphasis on sort of this trust factor. So you have to agree to our member agreement. You have to prove that you have a qualifying print disability, because we're not getting permission in the main from publishers. We're doing this under the copyright exemption. We have to actually say that you meet the copyright exemption. And so for blind people who are already signed up with NLS, they can just send us an email with permission to check with NLS, and then we will go to NLS, and within 2 weeks NLS will come back and say, yes, they're in our records. And so you can go ahead and certify them. And the last thing is that you have to pay for your membership. And the standard Bookshare.org membership costs $75 the first year and $50 a year thereafter. The people who do volunteer work get some credits against that, and there are people who have their membership paid for by other people. And I'll talk more about how basically anyone who's a student in the United States for the next few years is having their membership paid for by the Department of Education, but we'll get back to that. So those are the three key requirements: is agree to our member agreement, and you also put into your name and your address and your email, prove that you have a qualifying disability under the copyright law, and then get your subscription paid for either, you know, on your own pocket as a gift or subscription from someone, or by a third party like the Department of Ed or your school or your public library or whatever it might be.
Okay, we have a caller who's come in there, Jim.
Great.
So. Okay.
Good evening, and welcome to Main Menu.
Yes, this is Herman Campos. And I was curious, those books come in a folder, like the regular DAISY books do, you know what I'm saying? Do they have the NCC files kind of thing, like, so you can import it into something like the Plex Talks recording software and play it with that? But that thing needs to have the NCC files for it to play.
We'll let you listen on the air, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Okay. So there are two kinds of Daisy books. There are audio Daisy books, and there are text Daisy books, and then there's ones that have text and audio, and text, audio, and graphics. And so a Daisy book usually has a minimum of, I think it's like four files, and what we do is we actually distribute our books in what is called Daisy 2002. And instead of an NCC file, which is what the older Daisy 2 books had, which are only audio books pretty much, we have an NCX file. And so, yes, we have the NCX file. We also have an OPF file, a SMILE file, an XML file. And so those four files are the core of all Bookshare books, and that means that they'll work with any player that knows about Daisy text e-books. So, for example, if I take a Victor Classic that plays audiobooks from, say, RFB&B, and I put a CD with our text e-books in there, it won't read it because there's no text-to-speech synthesizer built in. Whereas we provide people with a free version of the Victor Reader software that'll run on their PC and will speak the text aloud and knows how to do it. So we provide that to all of our subscribers. And basically, any assistive technology product that handles text is going to work with Bookshare books because we're the largest supplier of text to fill up Braille displays, reading programs. So, for example, if you have Kurzweil 1000, you can scan your own book, but it's also possible while in Kurzweil 1000 to actually go to the Bookshare.org collection and download a book all without leaving your product. So I think I want to kind of fill in some of the details around that. And, the two formats that we provide books in, one is this Daisy text ebook format, and the other is BRF, which is a digital Braille format. We run a Duxbury Braille translator that takes the ebook and turns it into grade 2 Braille, and then you can print it out for what some people call quick Braille or lightning Braille. It's not high quality Braille, because it hasn't been actually done by a professional proofreader, but those are the two main formats, and then people use one of those two formats to create the other formats, large print, Braille hard copy, whatever it might be.
Wonderful.
So should I go on to volunteering?
Okay, yeah. Well, we have a question from Dan. He says, hey, I'd love to participate in Bookshare.org, but I'm Canadian. When are we going to start seeing some Bookshare.org access for Canadians and other international folks?
Well, it just so happens that we created Bookshare International in October, just 5 months ago. And probably no one's heard about it, so that's why it's great that I'm here on this show talking about it. So basically, International Bookshare is where Bookshare was in the U.S. 5-plus years ago. So because we don't have a global copyright law with a global exemption like our Chafee Amendment, what we have in many countries is a separate law, and each country's law is a little bit different, and they don't play nicely with each other. So I think Canada may have a law like this. I know the UK has a law similar to this, but each of them work different. And we actually did talk to Industry Canada and the Copyright Office there and the U.S. Copyright Office, and they all said, both Canada and the U.S. would have to change their law to make it possible to use this interaction. So I know the World Blind Union is working on this issue at sort of international levels, but it's a long slog. So what we decided to do in the interest of efficiency is go to publishers and say, could you please give us permission to serve everyone around the globe with a qualifying disability just like they're in the U.S.? And if the publisher, or if the author controls the copyright, the author gives us that permission, then we can do that. So right now, it's possible for blind Canadians to sign up for Bookshare. The price is the same as it is in U.S. dollars, and I understand that that's gotten cheaper in Canada lately. And same in the U.K. and New Zealand and South Africa and India. And basically, we have about 3,000 current copyrighted books in English and about 1,000 current copyrighted books in Spanish that we have these permissions. So, and we have 4,000 public domain titles that are available globally for free. So you're talking kind of 7,000 or 8,000 books out of our 36,000 books that are available to people outside the U.S., and I'm pretty sure that by the time 5 years go by, you'll have more than the, you know, 36,000 we have for Americans. But we have to actually go about this publisher by publisher. So we're focusing on large publishers, and as you mentioned, Daryl, O'Reilly Media gave us this global permission more than 3 years ago, and we have 600 or 700 O'Reilly books. But we also have done a global arrangement with Scholastic, which is the leading publisher of children's books. And as of the last 2 weeks, we just added 75 titles from HarperCollins and expect to add at least another 900 more in the next 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And not only do we have global permissions for these books, but the HarperCollins books are coming to us directly in high-quality XML. And so we created a new category of content in Bookshare above
publisher
what we
quality.
Call excellent.
Yeah.
Called publisher quality, because we don't have to go through the whole scanning process. So I think, you know, the short answer is that blind people around the world can sign up. The way I actually recommend they do it is they go to our advanced search page and go to what kind of books to search, and there's an option that says search for books that are globally available. And then you can actually see what books are available to you as a person who's in Canada or the UK or Australia or New Zealand or wherever you might be. And then if you look at those books and say, all right, I'd pay $75 US to get access to those books for, you know, for the next year, then go ahead and sign up and we'll get going. And we think it's important that Bookshare be the sort of globally available library, and that we really aspire to making this happen around the entire globe and sharing, as we do in the U.S., sharing the burden of acquiring books. And so we have a major partnership in India that has already started scanning books for us there, and they'll be scanning a combination of Indian books and books from India and books from the U.S. And obviously we're working on Indian publishers. We've gotten one Indian publisher to give us these permissions, and we're working on other international publishers. So it's off to a good start, and O'Bain Books is a science fiction publisher that has traditionally been very supportive of blind people, and they've given us a bunch of books, both the ones that they make available for e-text for free on their website, but also books that they haven't made available free on their website we can also add and make available globally. So I think that's something that's going off to a good start, and I would say it's in its infancy. It's where Bookshare was, you know, actually probably 6 years ago in the U.S. Maybe
great.
5.5 years ago.
Great, Jim. Wonderful. Well, we're still on the subscriber side, and we're about to take a call from Danny, and he'd like to ask a question about accessing Bookshare on a Macintosh computer.
Right.
Hello?
Go ahead, Danny.
Okay, good.
Welcome to Main Menu.
Thank you. My question for you is, I've got a Macintosh, and I think Katie Player, I never did get to buy that. I think that's gone. Is the thing from RFB&D the only way to go? Because it's a mighty expensive piece of equipment, you know, software. It's about $100 and some odd. Is that the only way to play Bookshare books on a Mac or what?
Now there's an Unpack tool. There's a free Unpack tool, isn't there, Jim?
Right, I've got that.
Yeah,
but I'm talking about to easily play the book.
Oh, I see, the Daisy Player.
So there's several pieces to this, and obviously the first step is, if I download the book from Bookshare, can I actually unpack it, you know, basically unzip it? And
I've done that many a time.
On the Mac.
And Danny will take your question off the air, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
You bet.
Go ahead,
and so that's piece one. And then piece two is, what kind of assistive technology do you use on the Mac? And so, you know, there are specialized versions of the Kurzweil 3000 that'll play our books on the Mac, and I think there's a version of Win. These are products that are probably primarily designed for dyslexic people, but are also good for low vision people. In terms of blind people, you know, your choices are kind of limited right now. And, you know, I know there's a built-in sort of screen reader type thing in the Mac.
VoiceOver,
which should sort of work with Bookshare books in a browser. You know, but we think that, you know, and getting back to Kafka's Daytime and the Katie Player, yeah, we tried to go to their website today and the website wasn't up, so we think that's a bad sign. But what we're doing is that we're planning on releasing a free Mac version of a Daisy Player with text-to-speech later this year. So right now the Victor Reader software only works on Windows, and I think it right now only works on Windows XP. So we've actually worked with them where we're going to get a Mac version as well as a Vista version.
Okay, and then you know, we should all keep in mind that Bookshare files do always is always correct. They always have a .html file included.
What we do, I mean, the XML file should just read in your browser.
Right.
But one of the options we have in the Unpack tool is we don't actually change the content of the XML file. We just say we'll make a copy with an HTML extension, and this
right.
fools some browsers into thinking it's HTML and doing the right thing. So, but so you know, it's the sort of thing where that's sort of compatibility mode. It shouldn't be necessary, but over and over again, we've just kept finding people need to kind of lie to their browser and say this is HTML, and then it works.
Right. Okay. So if you don't have a Daisy player, guys, there's definitely no reason not to get Bookshare, especially since you also have BRF. You can download a BRF version.
Or you could go. I mean, you know, what's your favorite place to read text? You know, if your favorite place to read text is Notepad, you know, you should be able to put it into Notepad with you know the right kind of you know, you might have to make an extra step, but you know,
right.
you can do that or Microsoft Word or something like that.
Wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely. So there's a lot of options there. We have a question from Bill on MSN, and then let's see, where is he? Okay, Bill wants to know. Oh, okay. Okay. All right, so Jim, yeah, let's move into the volunteer side of the house, and before we do, we actually have a question from Luis in Colombia. Luis says, I have a huge collection of psychology-oriented textbooks, and I'd like to submit those to Bookshare. Is that possible at this time?
And the answer to that is only through publisher permissions. And so I noted that we have 1,000 Spanish language books. And the way we did that is we actually partnered with a group of blind people in Argentina have a group called Tiflo Libros, and they have, I think, about 10,000, I don't think they have more than 10,000 books, but copyright laws are a little bit more flexible in Latin America than they are in the U.S., and so our arrangement with Tiflo Libros is that if they get the publisher to give them permission in writing to share the books, that then we'd take them, and so we've gotten 1,000 books that way. We're hoping to get more books that way. Now, I don't know which language Luis's books are in, whether they're Spanish or English, but that same kind of thing goes. If we can get the publisher to say yes, we can do almost anything. If you know, as far as you know, sticking to serving blind and people with severe disabilities. But if we don't have publisher permission, then we're back under the copyright law thing, and we can't take books, say, outside the U.S. and make them available in the U.S. I think in the medium term, we might be able to start sort of separate Bookshare projects that, if it's legal in the country to scan your own books for use in that country, that we might be able to add it. But that's a complexity we just haven't gotten to.
So would it be appropriate for such a person to write, maybe to volunteer at Bookshare.org to work out details to see if that's
that would
available
be
to them?
Great, and tell us what the publisher that, you know, is the one that they think of as being the main publisher of the books, or one of the big publishers of the books, and that'll give us kind of a flavor of that. Because right now we're negotiating with a lot of different publishers, and if they say, "Oh, I've got a whole bunch of psychology books that are being published by Thompson Cengage," then I can say, "Oh, great! I know who to bug over at Thompson Cengage and maybe get permission." And one of the things that we're doing, thanks to a large award that we got, that I think we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. We actually are hiring a person to do nothing but work with publishers to get permissions, which will help not only books in the U.S., but obviously people outside the U.S.
Wonderful.
Let me talk a little bit more about volunteering, because I know that was something we want to make sure we covered.
Okay, and then we'll do that for just another minute or two, and then Caroline, we know you're there. So
okay, great. So one thing I want to say about volunteering, as I mentioned before, the majority of the books come from volunteers, and even in the next 5 years, when we have a very ambitious program, we still think the clear majority of books are going to come from volunteers. And so volunteers is what makes Bookshare possible to grow so quickly. You know, we have volunteers who scan books, do character recognition in their favorite OCR product, do proofreading, and we also have people who do these different tasks separately. So, for example, we have a high-speed scanner here that scans, I think, 180 pages a minute, you know, and so we can scan an entire Harry Potter in 5 or 6 minutes. And so, you know, we have people who ship us books, we chop the binding off, we put it through the high-speed scanner, we run the OCR, and then we feed it into what we call the validation step, and that's basically proofreading and checking the quality of the book. And so I think that, you know, Bookshare is a library built by our members. That's a core value, and, you know, we're eager to attract anyone who's a book nut, whether they have a disability or not, who, you know, wants to help spread literacy and access to books. They're welcome to jump in and help us out, because you can volunteer to Bookshare, you know, to volunteer for Bookshare from your own home, on your own PC. As long as you've got a PC that's accessible, you could be helping us out.
That's wonderful news. Caroline, welcome to Main Menu again. Hey there.
Hello. My question is, if you're subscribed to Bookshare, can you download books to your computer if you don't have Daisy?
Yes. I mean, what kind of assistive technology do you have?
I just have the JAWS.
Yeah. So, for example, you could open up the Bookshare book in Internet Explorer like it was a web page, and read the book there using JAWS.
Okay. Thank you.
So, you're welcome.
And Caroline, I have to tell you, that is the way I personally read most Bookshare books, is to open it up in a browser, and then if I want to read it on another device, I'll often save it as text. And then read it that way. So a lot of people do that. You certainly would not be in a minority there. Thanks for calling, Caroline. Okay, so I think we're pretty well covered there. And again, I would say volunteer at bookshare.org as far as getting more information about how to volunteer.
Yeah. And, you know, we have a whole volunteer community that's really active, and we have people on our staff who help volunteers kind of get up to speed. And so we're actually, you know, eager to get lots more people. And for reasons I think I'm going to describe next, we're looking to recruit 3 or 4 times more volunteers than we have today. So, and maybe I should go ahead and cover that if that's
Yeah, let's go ahead and move. Let's go ahead and move down the list there, and you want to get into the grant award and all that good stuff.
That's right.
What you're thinking.
So Bookshare has been operating kind of on a shoestring for many years. As people know, we've had a team of 4 or 5 people operating Bookshare, plus a couple hundred really dedicated volunteers, on a budget of about $1 million a year. And what happened to us? It was kind of stunning to us as well as a lot of other people, is that the Department of Education put out a request for proposal last August saying, basically, do you want to operate a national book repository? And so we competed for it and did so well that we got the entire amount of the award, which in this case turned out to be $6.5 million a year for 5 years for more than $32 million. So what this means is Bookshare, you know, over a period of years, is going to go from $1 million a year project to a $7 million a year project. And that's really completely changing the game. So part of this award's requirements were that we would serve every single student in the U.S. without charging anything. Because basically the Department of Ed said, if we're paying you this money, you know, you shouldn't charge people extra. You should just go ahead and deliver it for free. So we've agreed to do that. And as of October 1, which is, you know, the Monday after the Friday where they made the award, Bookshare became free for every student in the U.S. We originally thought it was only students under 26, but it's pretty much anyone who's an enrolled student. So you could be 70 and enrolled in a community college course, and you'll get Bookshare for free during the time period where you're a student. And so K-12, post-secondary, graduate, adult ed, continuing ed, guide dog school. If you're a student in the U.S. And also groups that are or areas that are closely affiliated with the U.S., like I just came back from a 2-week trip to the Western Pacific to places like Guam and Micronesia and the Marshalls and Palau. They're all covered as well under this kind of deal. They all get free services. But people who aren't part of the U.S., like Canada and U.K., still have to pay, even if they're students, because the U.S. government isn't paying for that. But anyway, what this makes possible is everything that I've been dreaming about doing with Bookshare. Lack of finances is no longer the reason why we can't do it. And we made quite ambitious promises to the Department of Ed of what would happen if they gave us this money. So kind of ticking them off, you know, we would greatly scale up our textbook work. There's a new textbook repository and standard that I'll talk about in a second, but we said within 1 week of when we get these books, we're going to add these books to our Bookshare collection. We're going to go from serving a few thousand students to at least 100,000 students, and I think it's actually going to be considerably more than that. You know, we're going to completely re-engineer the Bookshare website. We're going to do things that users have been asking us to do for years, but now we have, you know, five engineers working on Bookshare rather than three-quarters of an engineer. And so suddenly a lot more things become possible. We're going to add 100,000 books minimum to our collection over the next 5 years, which implies a quadrupling of our existing rate of adding 100 to 125 books a week. So, you know, instead of, you know, 20 new books a day coming into Bookshare, it's going to be more like 80 or 100 new books a day. And so that just makes, I think, a phenomenal impact on this. And
oh,
so,
absolutely. The more books we can have, the better, for sure.
Yeah. And so now we can have, you know, a person doing things that, you know, one person used to do five things at once. Now we actually, you know, can have a person who does publisher coordination and get permissions, or a person to actually be a volunteer coordinator and the like. And so, you know, our collection development team, the people who do this chopping and scanning here, has gone from one part-time staffer to, I think, four full-time people, including one of our sort of alpha volunteer, Carrie Carnos, who a lot of Bookshare users know.
Oh, yeah.
We actually convinced Carrie to come and join us, because she's phenomenally
cool.
Productive. And so, so anyway, we're in the middle of this period. We've already started adding books from, you know, not only publishers like this, but we're also adding textbooks. We've signed up, I mean, Bookshare has gone from between 6,000 and 7,000 members to more than 16,000 members in just a couple months. So it's, you know, we've more than doubled, and we're close to tripling. And we think that growth curve is just going to continue. We also have, you know, the ability to, you know, we've added more tech support people. So Rob Turner has joined John Glass, so now we have two full-time tech support people. So anyway, you know, there's a lot of excitement going on around this, and the sort of the core Bookshare users are all going to be beneficiaries of just about everything we're doing, with one exception: you can't get your hands on K-12 textbooks that are provided to us directly through this national process, which I think is an issue that I probably should talk about a little bit more if you think the timing's right, or if you have a question, I can go to a question.
All right. Well, I'd certainly love to cover that, but we're getting a lot of traffic. This is a pretty popular show, actually. There, Jim. We have Bill. I'm not surprised. Every blind person who uses a computer should have Bookshare. If you don't have Bookshare out there, folks, and you live in the U.S., especially in that case, you're nuts if you don't have Bookshare. Okay, Bill, come on through, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Yeah, I'm going to chime in agreement. Yeah, if you don't have it, you need to get it. I have two questions. The first one's really quick. It seems to me like the only way to request a book is to join the news list and then make the request through that. Is that correct?
Well, that's one way you can do it today. Another thing you can do is you can just order the books from Amazon and ship them to us.
Yeah.
And, you know,
okay.
I mean, we get boxes of books from people, you know. We're like, okay,
my problem
and
is
now,
that I just have,
you know,
so much email.
It's going to take
traffic.
Us 3 or 4 weeks to get to it, but we're omnivorous in our book appetite.
I just know that, you know, I've got such a heavy email load that I can't subscribe to any more news lists, even if it's just in the digest form. I was hoping you guys could put like a little form on the site maybe for book requests.
Well, that's something that, you know, as we redesign the site, we want to have a more formal process for doing this. And I'll give you what I'm trying to build, and this will probably take 6 to 9 months at least, maybe as much of a year. But I'm negotiating a partnership with a major online book provider. We're going to install a chopper and scanner system in their warehouse.
Oh,
And we're going to set up an automated way. And my dream is, if you look, you do a search on Bookshare, there'll be an additional tag that said, didn't find what you want. And you click there, and it searches that search in this online book provider, and up pops this book, which we don't have, but is in stock at this book provider. And you push a button, and a message goes out to the book provider. We buy the book. They chop off the binding. They scan it, and they give us the OCR, and we put it into the validation queue. Now,
fantastic.
That,
well, that
kind of cool.
And that leads right into my other question. Are you guys ever going to be able to tap into all the work Google's doing?
Oh, I've only been talking to Google about this for 4 or 5 years. There's a couple things about Google. Google is a very socially responsible company, and I think a lot of people know it has put a lot of effort around accessibility over the last year or two, and partly because, you know, there are a lot of advocates that have pushed, and I wrote an essay about the inaccessibility of Google Book Search, you know, within the first few months of it coming out, and I know that they're working on it, and you know, advocates have been leaning on them and all that. But the thing is that Google's happy to give us all their public domain books, and they've got a million of them. But I don't think my users are all that interested in a million public domain books. And so the real interest is in the books from the last 20 years. And Google will only do those books with publisher permission. So the thing comes back to the publishers. So I think that right now we're in a position where we don't have to ask Google for any money. We just need to ask them to be nice guys. And if we can get the publishers signed up, that'll be fine. Maybe in the longer term, what I'd like to set up something is, there are a lot of projects like Google Books for these sort of books that aren't from the last 20 years. And I'd like to set it up so that if one of our subscribers requests the book, we'll get the book, hopefully get the images if they've already been scanned, and add the book to the collection. And I expect out of the million public domain books that Google has that I might get asked for 500 a year. And we pride ourselves in the low cost of adding a book to our collection. It costs us less than $50 to add a, you know, a science fiction book to our collection, because volunteers are doing it. And mainly what we need to do is just double check the copyright and do allocate a little bit of volunteer management. But you take $50 times a million books, and you could suddenly spend $50 million, and I don't have that. Not yet, even with this big award. So I think we'll do something more like that, but it's more user-driven, which I think honors Bookshare's original concept, and we'll really focus our efforts on getting publishers to agree. And part of our publish agreement is that if they agree, that we can ask places like Google and Amazon for the books, and I hold up hopes that Google might cooperate with something like that.
That sounds wonderful. I know we've been talking about this. We talked about this a couple of years ago at CSUN, and I'm glad to see that, especially if we get a publisher coordinator in there, it seems like a lot more of these things are going to be possible.
Yeah.
Hey, we have Allison wants us to talk about the different categories of books that are on Bookshare and all the magazines and newspapers you can now get on Bookshare and just everything that's available if someone were to decide to subscribe.
Well, right now, you know, I'd say that we're really strong on what are called trade books, which literature, bestsellers, nonfiction, and the like. So, for example, every book that's hit the top 10 New York Times bestseller lists over the last couple of years is on Bookshare. Every Newbery Award winner for children's books is on Bookshare. We're gathering teacher-recommended literature books. We're trying to scan all the books we think freshmen and sophomores in college would want to do. And that's on top of all the books that are just being done by our users because, you know, someone loves John Grisham and make sure that every John Grisham is on there, you know, as soon as possible or whatever it might be. So that's one kind of collection. We also have a partnership with NFB Newsline, which supplies us with digital access to newspapers and to magazines. So it's about 150 daily newspapers. So USA Today, Washington Post, New York Times, LA Times, La Opinion from LA in Spanish. So those are all hitting our site in the morning, you know, same time as sighted people get their newspapers. And so you can download the New York Times, be reading it on your note taker. And there's also a handful of magazines. So it's probably between 5 and 10. And I think The Economist and The New Yorker are two of the titles that are probably most notable. I think we also have a handful of ARP magazines. So I think that's the kind of collection that Bookshare is quite strong in terms of textbooks. That's a growing area, and of course I expect to be adding thousands of textbooks over the next couple of years, both K through 12 and post secondary. And let's see, another thing that we're getting ready to do is a reference collection. We really want to imagine Bookshare as being the equivalent of a well-stocked, well-funded, you know, library in a kid's school or a public library. And so what books would they have? Well, they'd have a reference section. And it turns out that reference books are really expensive to do well, but now we have some funding to do that. So, you know, we'll do some dictionaries, we'll do some thesauruses or thesauri, and we're busy kind of collecting what do you think the core is. And, of course, where we want to be, you know, is after a couple of years from now, you know, that college student or high school student, you know, or middle school student with a visual impairment, you know, can get access to all the same books that their sighted peers are getting access to, as, if not more easily.
Right. Wow. Well, and I think we're definitely moving very quickly in that direction. This might be a good time to talk about, because Bookshare is definitely now a distributor for books for the NIMAC, National Instructional Materials Accessibility Center, I believe that stands for.
Yep.
So
yep.
Would you like to tell us all about how that works and Bookshare's role in that process?
Hey Daryl?
Yeah.
Jeff?
Yeah, we got a phone call, and the person did not want to go on the air, but she had a question, and I just want to make sure we get this covered.
Go for it.
This may take a little bit of time. Asking about the synopses. I'm not sure what
synopsis.
For the high quality publisher books, many of these do not have synopses in Braille format, and she wants to know when they will be added, and what you plan on doing in the future for some of the backlog books that are available.
So this is actually several questions wrapped up into one.
Yeah.
So let me kind of tackle these in sequence. So the first thing is that right now most of the synopses are written by the person who uploads the book or by someone in the validation process. Okay, so now we have 1,000 HarperCollins books. Do we want to delay adding those books because they don't have synopses?
No.
Okay, but so we want to do the synopses automatically. So the way you do that is you put the ISBN number in and you grab the synopsis from Amazon. Our engineers have already done that, but we actually haven't got Amazon's permission to do that. And so it's on my long list of things to do is ask Amazon for permission to do that so that we could push a button and then any book that has an ISBN and doesn't already have a synopsis could get it added in. So that's where we're headed with that. And if I can't get it from Amazon, then we have to go and get it from someone else. But I think the key thing is that if we get the ISBN number right, that's sort of that, you know, universal code that leads you to information about the book, and we really want to go ahead and do that. And I might have to put a link on the page that says, you know, buy the hardcover or softcover from Amazon at this link to be able to add that content. So that's one thing. The second thing, and is the Braille comment, is actually that a lot of these books are coming in without the Braille. And the reason is that these new high-quality publisher books with lots of markup break our version of the Duxbury Braille Translator. And it turns out that we haven't been upgrading our Duxbury lately, so there are problems with our Duxbury that the Duxbury is fixed and we haven't integrated. And we talked to Duxbury and they said, we're about to release a new version that will handle all of these problems and all these NIMAC books, and so can you just wait a couple of months? And so what I think we're doing is I think our engineers are trying to work with a previous version of Duxbury that's better than what we have now in the system, and bring it up a couple notches and start producing Braille and then move to where we get this new one. So now
there is a solution, right? There is a solution of taking the HTML file and converting it and Braille translating it.
Absolutely. I mean,
right.
But there's some people who prefer to be able to download in Braille rather than to download in HTML and use their Braille Display's grade 2 converter.
Okay.
But, I mean, there is a workaround, which is one of the reasons why we don't, you know, I mean, the O'Reilly books actually have broken our Braille translator for years.
Right.
And very few O'Reilly book users cared because they were using it in a browser and it looked better in a browser and, you know, and they were willing to put up with things in terms of, you know, converting things into grade two and then seeing some funky things happen with code and stuff like that. I mean, people, the technically sophisticated people were happy with that. Now we're starting to get a lot of mass market books in directly in these high quality formats, and they still don't work with the Braille translator. And so anyway, so that's something that we consider a priority, but at the moment the trade-off is get lots more high quality books in fast and then fill in some of these gaps. And I want to give people some ideas that this is actually going to be a big year of transition. There'll be a lot more books, a lot better quality. We'll be upgrading our assistive technology, which we haven't really talked about at length. But there are going to be times where we're going to say, hey, for the next 2 months, volunteer uploading is going to be a little funky because we redesigned it and we haven't, you know, recreated every single feature we had in the old version. So we are definitely going through a massive set of changes, and, you know, we're trying to keep the fundamentals. The books are available. You can find them. People can download them. People can sign up. Going while we tune up a lot of things that are, I think, are very, very important features, but aren't quite at that core level. So let me talk a little bit about the NIMS NIMAC thing, because I'll do it fast because I think, you know, it could take up an entire hour, and I don't think we have that anymore. But in the 2004 refresh of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, it was mandated that all K-12 publishers need to produce their books in what's called the NIMAS, the National Instructional Materials Accessibility Standard, which basically is DAISY, but has a minimum set of requirements for quality on DAISY. So you could make a DAISY book that had one page, one chapter, you know, one paragraph and 100,000 words, and it would be a valid DAISY book, but it wouldn't be a very useful book. So NIMAS says pretty much you got to have page numbers, you got to have chapters and sections, you've got to have, you know, this metadata about the book, you know, information about the book. And so the publishers have started producing books in this standard. And the nice thing is that the NIMAS file format is, you know, a higher quality version of what Bookshare has been shipping for 6 years. So this is where this publisher quality content comes along. And it's beautiful. So now, for reasons, political reasons I can't begin to explain, Bookshare and RFB&D have been mostly locked out of the NIMAC, which is the repository where the publishers push it out. We can't actually get books out of it. The only way we can get a book is if a state agency, each state has five people they can designate as what they're called authorized users of the NIMAC, this repository that's operated by the American Printing House of the Blind. The state actually has to ask for it. So there are about 1,000 textbooks in the NIMAC right now, and we've had between 70 and 80 of them assigned to us. We're starting to add them to the Bookshare collection, but the terms, the limitations of use on the NIMAC are such that we can't make them generally available to the entire Bookshare community. And what we're doing is they can actually only be made available to K-12 students who have an IEP. And the way that we're managing this is through schools. So we're saying schools, you have to certify the student has a qualifying disability, they have an IEP, and then you can download, you know, this 10th grade American history textbook. So we had some frustration from our users saying, hey, here's this new high-quality content, and we can't have it. And we said, yeah, but some of these restrictions were in the law, some of these restrictions were in the way APH decided to run the NIMAC for, you know, reasons which are neither here nor there. It's just the way things are. And anyone who still wants that book that is available there could scan it and submit it, and we'd take it, and it wouldn't come with those strings.
Hey, Jim.
Because it came from the publisher. Yep.
I had a question about this because I think there's a really huge miss here in reference to getting accessible materials to parents.
Blind parents of sighted or blind children.
Yeah, I have two children, and you know, it really would be beneficial to have access to, you know, their school books to be able to.
Oh, believe me, I'm on the National Advisory Committee for this. I advocated for that. The disability groups advocated for that. I'm pretty sure George Kershaw advocated for that, and we were shot down. We just lost on that point.
Oh. Well, I'm glad you at least brought it up because. Yeah,
believe me. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're with you as far as what the right answer was.
Yeah.
And what actually happened is the publishers were more flexible early on in the process. And then they lost some major things that irritated them, and they basically got less flexible. And so it's one of the reasons why, you know, this law was passed in 2004, and not much has happened lately, you know, and it should have been really happening. And I think that part of us getting this large award is trying, is one of what the department is trying to do to break the logjam and get these books available. But so, you know, but we have to pretty much, we thought it was more important to get the books in the collection for students, and it's also, by the way, a requirement of our Department of Education award to do that. So, because that's kind of, you know, the core thing is textbook access for K-12 students.
Well, it really is, you know, it really seems to me that, you know, I know the NFB and ACB and, you know, a number of organizations and politicians were involved in creating the legislation, and it would have been nice to have had the language in, if it would have been in the legislation, then they would have pretty much had to have done it, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think the language got sort of written the last night after everyone thought it was all done, and they made some mistakes. I mean, it's possible for a blind student to be in high school and ineligible to get these books because they're well accommodated in terms of their disability and they don't need an IEP, right? I mean, there are blind kids who have 504 plans, you know. Blind kids who say, you know, or low vision kids who say, yeah, you know, with my monocular, I can do the job. I don't need anything else. And they don't qualify for these books because even though they qualify under the copyright law, they don't have an IEP. They can't get these books that are originally coming from the NIMAC. So this is, you know, and people recognize that an IDEA is coming up for a refresh in 2009. It may not happen in 2009. And I think a lot of the advocates are aware of some of these things that got a little bit botched. And, you know, we'll have another round of advocacy around how do we make this actually work better. And, you know, if you guys can get in the provision that allows these books to be made available to blind parents of sighted kids who need it because they want to help their kid with their homework, more power to you.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Jim. And we also want to let everyone know that Allison is one of the Bookshare, a Benetech employee. And she is actually, and she said you may not have known about this yet, Jim, but she is actually making, adding the synopsis for all the publisher quality books. She's with that. And Allison,
good way to find out what your people
place.
Are doing there, Jim.
Yeah.
I go to, you know, the Western Pacific for 2 weeks, and all sorts of miracles happen. It's,
yeah,
you know,
pretty amazing.
So
stuff.
The pace is stepping up here.
So if any of you out there already know the synopsis or already have the synopsis for one of the books that's missing it, she would invite you to write a note to Allison@Benetech.org, and she could certainly she'll take any volunteers too.
Yeah, and you know, we have policies about what we can do, so you can't go to Amazon and grab it, because that's, you know, we're concerned about that. But we do permit people to take the book jacket blurb and add that as a synopsis, because our lawyer has ruled that that's a reasonable thing to do in conjunction with our books, and so, and, you know, and there's a whole way of doing it right, and I'm sure Allison would help anyone with that. So, I think we're actually kind of running up against our time limits, aren't we?
I think we are, Jim. Would you like to remind everyone how they can become involved as a subscriber and or a volunteer, and how they can join the various Bookshare related mailing lists?
Well, I actually am not the right person to ask about the mailing list, even though I'm on, you know, one in digest form. I hasten, but you can go to www.bookshare.org. And there's a way of signing up for our membership then and there, and our staff will help you get the qualification, you know, thing taken care of. So if you don't have Bookshare right now, you can go ahead and get a subscription right away. And there's also information, I'm sure, on how to sign up for the volunteer listservs. We also have the ability to say, yes, I want to volunteer, and then we follow up with all that information for someone who's interested. And people don't have to be visually impaired or disabled, print disabled, to volunteer. We have lots of parents and teachers and just plain old book nuts who choose to volunteer and help grow this collection. And, you know, anyone who's interested in spreading books to this community is welcome to join us in this effort.
Wonderful. Well, Jim, thanks once again for coming on to Main Menu. It's been our pleasure to to have you on the show to talk about Benetech and Bookshare, and I'd like to have you back when you have a significant update on the project.
And, you know, maybe next time you'll even have people like Allison who know more about it than I do, and they might share some of the real nitty-gritty with you. So.
Well, you know what? You know what? Maybe next time we'll have you know, you can let us know how you'd like to do that for sure there, Jim. And again, looks like there are many updates potentially coming out over the next year, and we're going to be excited to have you or Allison or someone from Benetech coming back on to talk with us all about them.
Hey, Jim,
thank you very much, Daryl.
Jim, I was wondering if you wanted to cover briefly, I know this was briefly mentioned, about the assistive technology updates that are coming to Bookshare.
Well, part of the award from the Department of Ed is that we also have to supply what's called specialized assistive technology for reading the books. And this is just the assistive technology for reading the books. So it's DAISY ebook players. It's not that we're going to be providing Braille displays and JAWS for free. But we actually made a very important part of our proposal that we were going to go out and reach out to kids who didn't have PCs, who didn't have assistive technology. So we're going to be developing a lot of technology around meeting the needs of the kid who's borrowing a computer or is at a public access terminal and doesn't have any assistive technology. And how can they read Bookshare books without having any assistive technology installed? We also want to take care of the kid who has a $20 MP3 player or a $40 cell phone. And so we're spooling up a lot of these efforts to develop, I think, you know, and we call it the raising the floor effort. Bring everyone up to this basic level so that no matter what your personal circumstances are, you get basic access to just about any book, and then we'll grow it from there. So I'm not trying to take on JAWS in the workplace or do a screen reader, but I am trying to make sure that that kid who doesn't have any assistive technology is able to get access books where they are on the tools or the products that they actually have, which are likely to be things like MP3 players and cell phones.
That's excellent, and I especially think this is going to be really beneficial to, you know, learning disabled, you know, children too, who of course also qualify for NLS. So,
as you may know, it's harder to qualify for NLS than Bookshare for reasons that we probably don't have time to go into. But basically, we and RFB&D have a certain way of approaching things that are very similar. We worked with RFB&D in developing it. And we also work with NLS. So anyone who qualifies for NLS is definitely going to qualify for Bookshare. It may be harder for someone who qualifies for Bookshare to go to NLS unless they go get, you know, an MD signing off. So just be clear on expectations.
I would like to say real quick, too, that I know you guys make it really, really, really easy. A lot of agencies, a lot of agencies make the, unfortunately, tend to make the qualification process, despite the fact that you are coming to them because you need accessibility, they often may tend to make the process for gaining that accessibility somewhat inaccessible. And Benetech does not do that. Benetech is really accommodating and really works with people on helping them qualify to receive the service.
Oh, and we're working hard to make it even easier because I still think it's way too hard. So. And I think this Department of Ed work, we're making it possible now for school districts to send us digitally their rosters of students who qualify. And if the students don't want their name shared, they can put pseudonyms there. And that way, you know, we've actually had one school district send up 2,000 people at a single throw. Well, that's 2,000 people who don't have to fish around for a doctor's note.
Yeah.
And especially when they, you know, get older and want to have their own Bookshare account because they've graduated from high school or college, you know, we want to make that easy, and the easiest way to do that is go through the school systems and have them do it for everybody.
But you still have the email process, right? Where you'll send the email out, and you'll
absolutely
the doctor or the qualifying professional can send a fax, and it's all accessible from the subscriber's perspective, correct?
Yep. It's going to get more accessible, and we're not going to backtrack on things we already do today to make it easy. So
wonderful. Thank you very much, Jim. It's been a pleasure having you on. You have a great evening now.
Thank you very much, Daryl. It's great to be here. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. That was Jim Fruchterman with Benetech, and you can learn more at bookshare.org. And coming right up, we'll play an Access Watch from Jamie Pauls. Access Watch review, and then we'll have Darcy and Holly on to talk with us all about the Apple Air.
That's right. They actually went out and took a look at this thing. So while Daryl goes out and retrieves them from Skype land, they are online, which is great. We'll go ahead and hear from Access Watch.
Hi, this is Jamie Pauls with another Access Watch review. Sometimes I find things on Access Watch that even surprise me. This week, I found a couple of really comprehensive reviews, one for Replay AV version 8.41, and another for Replay Music version 3. You'll find links to tutorials, podcasts, and some really good comments about both programs. Check it out at www.accesswatch.info. I'm going to try to put review alerts on the blog from now on. Check out our blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. Have a great week.
Thank you very, very much, Jamie. And great site over there. Go check it out. Next week, we're going to be having GW Micro on to talk all about WindowEyes version 7.0 and the new scripting capabilities, amongst other new features that are going to be available in WindowEyes 7.0. It's sure to be a main menu that you do not want to miss. We'll have some very special announcements about upcoming shows on main menu concerning GW Micro and their new scripting product. So stay tuned for that. Let's see if Daryl has retrieved Darcy and Holly. Daryl?
I have. Everybody's here. Darcy and Holly.
Welcome aboard, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi.
Well, great to hear you, and I hope you guys are doing well.
Yep, doing good here.
Oh, good, good. So now, when we talked a couple of weeks ago, you were mentioning that you were making a little trip and to go out and see the new Air laptop.
Yeah, we went to the Apple Store on Saturday, and we had a chance to play with the new MacBook Air, and We both kind of had to repeat to ourselves, you know, there's nothing wrong with our MacBooks. We don't need one of these. You know, it's you would not believe how thin it is. It is so, like, you almost have to see it. Like, it's just so. And when you close the screen down, I can see why on the commercials and stuff they show you, like, they put it in an envelope, because it could very easily fit in an envelope. It's that thin.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And what's neat is, if you've seen a MacBook, the keyboard on the MacBook Air is pretty much the same. Like, they didn't make the keyboard any smaller. It's still got your full-size MacBook keyboard on it. And it's very small. It's very thin, and really light. Like, what was, do you remember what the weight was on it?
It's only 3 pounds or something?
Yeah, something like 3 pounds, which is, for a laptop, is really light. And, you know, it's definitely a nice machine. Like, if we were talking about this before the show, and we're thinking that, you know, maybe, you know, depending on certain factors, you may not want it as your primary computer, but if you were looking for a note taker, I definitely think it's the way to go. I mean,
yeah,
it doesn't
have a CD-ROM.
Doesn't have a CD-ROM drive.
You can buy an external one,
but it.
It's really light if you want to, like, if you have to carry it around a lot, it's very light for that.
Yeah. Like, if you're a student who has to carry a bunch of other stuff, I think the MacBook Air would definitely be the way to go. Or anytime, I guess, if you're carrying around a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because it's, you would not believe how, like, you really got to see this thing for yourself if you can, because it's so small and so thin. It's really amazing.
Now I got to see my sister-in-law's MacBook over Christmas vacation. I was really impressed with its construction. How is the construction of the MacBook Air? Does it still retain its durability, or does that suffer with the smaller size?
Yeah, you'd be really surprised, because you'd expect something that thin to be really flimsy, but it has a really solid feel to it.
It's metallic, like the casing is aluminum, I think, so it has a really, you know, metal, metallic feel, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's really durable. It feels really solid.
Like, it feels like it you know, you could, it could withstand quite, like, it would be fine for traveling and, you know.
Yeah. We didn't put it to any tests or anything.
Yeah, obviously they don't let you move it very far because they have those security things on it.
Well,
and
I've heard it's built like a tank. I mean, compared to say even a Dell laptop, it's built just amazingly well.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Dell laptop, and God forbid if I put that up in the overhead bin on an aircraft or something. I don't know, many times it doesn't serve, I always think of, I'm going to hear a crunch sound and my, screen's going to crack and, LCD is going to leak all into the keyboard and fry the motherboard,
It looks pretty solid, the MacBook Air.
Yeah, it does.
Obviously, like I said, we couldn't tell for certain, but just from the feel of it, you can usually tell by the feel of something, whether it's well constructed or not, and this definitely had that feel to it.
What about the keyboard, though? I mean, with it being that light, does it really have a solid feel, the keyboard?
It does. I don't know. I know Daryl said he saw a Mac. Have you had a chance to ever look at a MacBook, Jeff?
I have not. No, I've seen many Macs, but not a MacBook.
I'm pretty impressed with the MacBook.
The keyboard is the same. Like, it's that same type of, with the big flat keys.
And you still have just as much tactile feedback as you do with the...
Yeah, and it feels solid. I mean, it feels, from the limited time we could type on it, it feels just the same as the MacBook.
Yeah,
now, from a performance, perspective, hard drive space, CPU, memory, all that, how does that stack up?
Well, it's slower than the other portables.
It's like a 1.8 gigahertz.
Yeah, it's a 1.8 gigahertz processor
Core 2 Duo.
As opposed to the they just did a rev today actually on all their lines, and the slowest MacBook you can get now is a 2.1. That's the base model.
Mm-hmm.
So it is slower, but
it comes with 2 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, it comes with 2 gigs of RAM, and it comes with an 80 gig hard drive. And I don't think anyone's doing this at this point, but they also sell a 64 gig solid state drive.
Oh, now that's cool.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit more.
it's quite a bit more expensive. I think, I don't know how many people are buying that, but. obviously, being that there's no moving parts at all, the battery life is going to be better, and there's, things are going to load faster. But just to comment on the fact that the processor speed's a little bit lower, I find with my MacBook, now it was the first generation MacBook, it's a 2.0 Core Duo, and I find, unless I'm doing something like, encoding audio or anything like that, I'm rarely coming close to taxing it.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'd have trouble. I think the average user who, computer
Mail,
user...
Safari, those kind of things aren't...
Yeah, you'd come nowhere close to...
So, Toonhead wants to know, do the MacBooks have the dots on the F and the J?
I believe
they do, correct?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Yep, dots on the F and the J.
I think one of the things
like little nubs on the F and the J.
Oh, really? Like little nubs?
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I think that I heard, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I don't think it's upgradable as far as amount of RAM, right? So you get 2 gig and that's it, right?
That's.
I
don't think and also the other thing is that may be a problem for some people. Is the battery is not user replaceable.
Ouch.
If you go to an Apple store, they'll do it for you.
Why do they do that? Like, they do that with everything.
Well, no, they're MacBooks and MacBook Pros, those are user replaceable.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay.
But the thing is, I don't think, I'm guessing if you saw, it's like an iPod. I mean, if you look at an iPod, it's like, how are you going to get this thing apart? You need special tools.
This thing's not much thicker than an iPod. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you're not, it's, you probably need special equipment to even get it apart or especially get it back together again.
But I think when they replace the battery, they don't charge any more than, you'd pay for a MacBook Pro battery.
Right.
So they don't charge you, for labor and stuff like that. It's just...
Oh, that's good. So if you need to take it in and replace it, they just charge you the cost of the battery.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully you're close to an Apple store.
Yeah.
I think we have one in Tucson, I think.
Yeah. So,
kind of expensive too. Like, it's more expensive than the MacBooks.
Leo Laporte was talking about this. It was either last weekend or the weekend before, And he said that was one of his major complaints, was that unfortunately it's just really, you know, high for the
for
what you get.
I think it's for a real niche market. Like, it's one, you know, sub notebooks are still kind of new.
Yeah.
So I think it's for a niche market.
I don't think Apple is really trying to push this thing as, you know, a desktop replacement. Like, you know, you could have a MacBook or a MacBook Pro, and that could be your only machine. But I think they're really thinking the MacBook Air would be a second computer. Because, like, for example, one of the things they do, I don't know if you heard about this or not, but instead of using, it doesn't have a CD-ROM. You could get an external one if you want to, like a DVD drive. Or they have this program that it comes with that you can run on any other Mac or any other PC, and through the wireless, like through your wireless network, you can kind of take over another computer's optical drive.
And use it as the computer's optical
And so if
drive.
You needed it for something, you could use it that way.
Well, that's pretty handy.
Yeah, and it's cool that it works for both a Mac and a PC. So,
yeah.
I don't know what kind of performance you get or how that works exactly, but I mean it does have the 802.11n Wi-Fi, so I'm guessing it's pretty fast.
I assume VoiceOver runs fine on it, no issues there.
Yep.
Yes.
No. It only has one speaker. The other MacBooks have two speakers.
Oh.
Have, like, you know, stereo, but the speaker, we could hear it in the Apple Store. It's probably not something you want to listen to music on. It wasn't extremely loud, but we could hear VoiceOver, and it wasn't, I mean, in a crowded place like the Apple Store, we could still tell what it was doing. But it's probably not extremely loud, but...
But you can plug headphones into it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So Peter asks, can you turn off the screen to save battery life?
Great question.
Route the
Yes.
Really?
We do this all the time with our MacBooks. You can turn the... if you turn the brightness down all the way, it essentially turns it off. They run, at least with the MacBooks, we find they run a lot cooler with the screen off, and with the battery life is obviously longer. So,
what kind of battery life are you getting on your MacBook Pro, you know, and then versus what you think you might get on the Air?
What do we get on our MacBooks?
Like 4 or 5 hours.
Four or five hours.
I haven't timed it lately, but...
And that's what they're claiming you get with the Air, but I haven't heard any reports. Because sometimes what they say you get and what you actually get can differ, but we haven't heard any reports about that, so...
So do you guys read Bookshare books on your Mac, on your Macs?
I'm not a Bookshare member, and Darcy can't.
I can't be, because they don't have it.
Tisk, tisk.
Well, that's a
bummer. It comes out, Holly. No, just kidding.
Now, see, Holly, you need to get Bookshare, and, you know.
Yeah. I haven't gotten a membership, because I'm an Audible member, and so most of the books that I read are from there, so I haven't really found...
But I know people are reading, but there is, you can read Bookshare books on the Mac, so it is definitely possible.
There's a tool and everything.
And
so.
It would be great someday if they could have access to Canada. That would be kind of nice.
Well, I'll tell you this. I know that the difficulty is not with Benetech. It's a legal issue, unfortunately.
Copyright is, I mean, it's really frustrating, because, you know, there are things, even on Apple, like there are songs, if I go to the iTunes store, there are sometimes where Holly will buy a song and I can't buy the same song, because they haven't worked, and vice versa. Like, sometimes I'll find a song, like, by some Canadian artist, and she can't get it in the U.S. So, you know, copyright law is...
So the other thing, too, is, obviously Benetech is going to take the most conservative stance, right? Because they wouldn't want to do anything to jeopardize the project.
Yeah. So. Oh, I know. I definitely understand all the reasons. It's just frustrating sometimes.
Well, you know what? The answer is the United Nations, right? We get a copyright convention through the United Nations that supports us. Then I think they'd open it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So. Do you have any other updates with Leopard, with VoiceOver and Leopard? And I know some of the have there been any updates to that? Have there been any updates to some of the HTML issues we've heard about in the past? Anything you guys can tell us there?
Well, there was an update to the Mac OS X. Was that a week ago or 2 weeks ago?
I think
2 weeks ago. There wasn't really much VoiceOver related, other than there was an issue on the dock that you couldn't which you want to, this won't even make sense if you've never used it, but the way you can view folders on the dock, there was a problem, and that's been fixed. So I think as far as VoiceOver, that's unfortunately the only thing that's been fixed. The bugs that we've had before, I believe, are still there. The multi-select list boxes, which is very frustrating because yeah. we do hear about that a lot.
One thing I noticed yesterday when I was looking at my iPod and iTunes, before it wouldn't show like how much space I've used. Now it shows that, so I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, so the
we just ran across that yesterday.
Yeah, they've added. It's really weird because a lot of times because it's mainly about, you know, the software more so than the screen reader, you know, you'll get an update and then you'll notice something later on. It's like, oh, that's different.
That wasn't there before.
That wasn't something I could see before. So you just discover little things as you go. I'm trying to think. It's been a while since we've known if there's been anything new that's been really, really interesting. We've had some reports, and I haven't been able, neither of us have been able to confirm this yet, but there have been some reports that GarageBand, which is their audio editing program, has improved in the latest version. And
I've seen that too, and I haven't seen anything conclusive. But somebody mentioned, I heard it's made accessible. But
yeah, that's the thing, and it's one of those things where, you know, we'll probably get it eventually just to find out. But it's not really something that either of us need, so it's
well. On Saturday, we looked at it briefly, but it's hard to, because I don't remember what it was like before.
Yeah, so neither of us really used it before, so it's kind of hard to tell what's changed.
I looked at the buttons. The buttons were labeled, but I don't know. I don't even know what I was looking for.
We're hoping to talk with some people more about that and really get some definitive answers there, because I know that's something a lot of people want to be able to use.
Yeah,
is GarageBand. So, trying to think if there's been anything else over the last little while.
I think those are the main things. I can't think of.
That's been about the main things have been. And we mentioned this briefly, but today the Apple just updated their MacBook and MacBook Pro lines. So if you're thinking about, if you've been looking at the MacBooks and MacBook Pros before, you may want to go back to the Apple website and look, because the specs have all increased. So if it's something, you know, you really, if you're thinking about a Mac laptop, you really want to go through and you look at all the specs for all the different, you know, the three different lines and see which one kind of meets your needs.
Now, we've talked about iTunes, of course, but have you guys tried out Amazon MP3 on the Mac yet? Does that
work? Works for me, yep.
Holly has. I guess of course, going back to the whole copyright in Canada thing.
They're gonna open that up, aren't they?
I know.
They are opening that up, actually.
Yeah.
Are they totally. Okay? That's great, because it always seems like here in Canada we're the last people that get everything. So
yeah.
But I'm hoping that we get that soon. But.
Hey guys, we have a caller.
Okay.
Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller.
Hi, it's Carmelo.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a question about. 2 months before Tiger came out, now this is going back, someone came to, because I'm calling from Maryland, someone came from Maryland, to Maryland, from Apple, and gave a presentation on Tiger, and, you know, I was aware of VoiceOver, you know, way before, you know, a lot of the blind community heard about it. Now, the thing that they told us is because the iPod also runs generally the same operating system that the Mac does, of course with some modifications, they were eventually planning to port VoiceOver to the iPod. Have you guys heard anything? I mean, have they scrapped those plans, or what's the deal?
We'll let you listen on the air, okay?
Sure, thanks.
Okay.
Actually, I've not heard that, but I know Apple has gotten awarded some patents for some text-to-speech technology related to that.
Yeah, for some audio interfaces related to the iPod. Now, see, going back to what the caller said there, I'm not sure that that's exactly right. As I understand it, the iPod Classic and the iPod Nano run a different operating system, but the new, like the iPod Touch and the iPhone, are basically running OS X. So I don't know if they could actually just port VoiceOver over, but I'm sure they could do something.
I haven't heard that, though.
We haven't heard that. And But what's
and here we go to this dichotomy, right? You know, the, all even though they have VoiceOver and they have all this built-in accessibility on the notebook and desktop side of the house, their hardware is a different issue.
Yeah. Although to be now this won't be great for everyone, but I mean Holly and I do both use iPods and use them quite successfully, so it can be done. It's not as you know, obviously it would be better if there was a voice there, but it, I mean if you know your music library and it's well organized, I mean most of what you do with the iPod is done through iTunes anyway, as far as you know putting things on it and organizing it and stuff. So it's doable, but it's not you know, it depending on how if you're the type of person who, you know, likes to play around with things and kind of learns by trying, like by exploring, then you might be able to use an iPod. It's hard to say.
Well, have either of you tried Rockbox on your iPods?
No, I haven't, because I have a lot of music that I bought from the iTunes store and Audible books and things. And
that's yeah, things like Audible books. Anything with, of course, DRM is not going to work. And also, the thing is that, like, one feature that I really like with the iPod is, say you're listening to a book on Audible, right? You're listening to a book from Audible on your computer with iTunes. When you plug in your iPod, it syncs. It remembers. It keeps the playback position, so you can pick it up on your iPod. And if you go somewhere, you come back, and then you want to listen to your computer again, you sync it, and your place is restored on the computer again. So it always
pretty impressive.
It always has your most recent listening position. So that things like that, like the auto syncing, you know, once you add new music or new audiobooks or new podcasts to your library, when you plug in, if you have it set to auto sync, it automatically moves that stuff over there. So,
and I actually haven't felt like I've needed voice. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. And so I just haven't really felt like I need to put Rockbox on.
Mm-hmm. But so yeah, that's what we're. But we'd love to. I mean, obviously, we'd love to see them do something with VoiceOver,
yeah,
or some sort of spoken interface, because I think you know that hurdle would a lot of people would probably get iPods after that.
Yeah. We have a caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live, Larry.
Yes, hello. I recently went through an evaluation of my equipment to see where I stood with current technology and all that. Decided to upgrade. And I went to see a MacBook about 2 weeks ago for the first time. Spent about 30, 45 minutes just looking at it and talking about the basic, you know, equipment and that sort of thing. Really didn't get to use VoiceOver that much. Read a lot, but you know, you get in the store and your brain just goes to mush. You can't remember all the commands you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The people in the store didn't really have a good grip on VoiceOver, although they were digging and trying to help out and all that. I ordered one and got one today.
Oh,
totally blind.
Nice.
Totally blind. And in an hour and a half, I had gone through the registration process, set it up, and you know, I certainly don't know everything about it by any means yet, but it was amazing to pull it out of the box. My wife was going to help me, but I turned on the MacBook. It started talking and said, if you needed help to continue with VoiceOver, just keep pushing the arrows. And it just stepped you through every step of the process. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what the experience we had as well. I mean, we both got our MacBooks having very little experience and play with it. So what have you done with it so far?
Nothing. I mean, I just finished getting it registered right before the program here. I was trying to actually figure out real quick if I could connect to ACB, you know, the mainstream here with it. I got into Safari a little bit, and I got to a website, and I got to the ACB website, but I wasn't able to activate the stream for some reason. So, you know, that's
okay.
Ignorance on my part.
Let's talk about that. Do you have any more questions, Larry, or we can take that?
No, not really. I mean, I wanted people to know, you know, what. And I've used PCs for, you know, 25 years.
Sure, right, of course.
And yeah. Windows and JAWS and the whole bit.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Just kind of getting frustrated with the whole, you know, constant pay for upgrades every year.
Oh, I hear you.
It was pretty amazing to be able to pull the computer out of the box and just start using it without too much education on it.
Well, Larry, let's go ahead and let you listen on the air, and we'll talk about this, because this is something I think we really do need to talk about you've bought your Mac, and you now want to be able to, I mean, sure, it's selfish, but why not? You want to be able to listen to ACB radio on your Mac, and so let's talk a little bit about that.
All right, well, first of all, one of the things that we should point out is that if iTunes is once you get the hang of iTunes, it's actually really easy to use. And if you look under the radio streaming section of iTunes, all the ACB radio feeds are already there, so you can listen.
Spoken word.
Yeah, under spoken word, you've got the ACB Radio Mainstream and Treasure Trove, and is it Eclectic?
Eclectic, yeah.
Under Eclectic, you've got the Cafe and Interactive, so they're already there. I was pleasantly surprised when I first got iTunes and like hey, the AC radio stuff's already there. So you can get it there. The website navigating with Safari is different than what you'll be used to, and it does take a little bit of work. Now the ACB radio website is fairly straightforward, so that probably is a good place to start.
Yeah, especially if you're familiar with it.
Yeah, if you're familiar with the ACB radio site, that's actually a really good place, because there's not a lot of columns, and like the layout is fairly straightforward, so that's actually a really good place to start playing around with Safari. So it wouldn't be hard, because iTunes, like, to answer the basic question, iTunes can play those kind of streaming media, so you won't have any trouble being able to listen to ACB radio on your Mac. So, I don't know, like, what else you can say there? Like I said, the Safari interface, because it's a very different way of looking at a web page. Some people like it, some people don't. I would say to Larry, just be patient with it, play around with it, and go to sites you're familiar with, and as you do that, you'll come to get how it works.
Does Leopard have iTunes installed by default?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It does. Okay, well, that probably goes without saying.
Time you run it will ask you, to agree to the license, and it'll ask you a few questions about how do you want it to automatically import all your media, and a few questions like that, but then once you do that, it'll be ready to go.
So to help Larry out here a little bit, only because he probably has no clue even where it's at on the Mac, how do you get it launched?
How do you get iTunes launched? Well, the easiest way is should we talk about the Finder or the Dock, do you think?
The Dock is probably easier.
Okay, the Dock is probably the best way to go. The Dock is sort of like, I like to think of it as a cross between the desktop in Windows and the taskbar. It's a thing at the bottom of the screen. And it shows all your open applications, like all the ones that are running, but you can also put ones that you use all the time down there. And if you press your voiceover commands, which is
Control option,
and the letter D, it will take you down there. And then just move to the right with the arrow keys until it tells iTunes, and then just press enter on it, or press return, rather. I have to make sure to say return, because in some instances on the Mac, return and enter are actually can perform two different functions. So you press return, and iTunes will open up
for
you.
Or you can press control option space.
Yeah, you can press voiceover space, and that'll open it up for you.
Wow,
so
wait.
The Dock.
Return, it does two different things on the Mac?
Yeah. They're not always. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they perform different functions.
That's rather odd.
Yeah.
I've honestly never came across it where they perform two different things, but they're supposed to.
I'm trying to think. There are some examples that
in Sound Studio, do they? They perform different
things. Oh, yeah, in Sound Studio is one example where pressing enter puts a marker in at the current spot you're listening to. So there are instances where return and enter do different things. So,
yeah.
But it is weird. Go ahead.
Are you aware of this? And when I maybe we're not quite done with this thread, but when we are, there's apparently a new audio editor that does scrubbing and stuff. But
no, we hadn't heard that.
Oh,
do you know what it's called?
Yeah, what's it called, Daryl? I forgot.
Oh, Dane Trethowen sent it out a couple of weeks ago now. It's a new audio editor. We'll have to get that information for all of you now. But there's apparently a new audio editor out. He likes it, says it's very accessible. And it now has scrubbing, and you can do this from the keyboard and everything.
Okay.
Is it free, Daryl?
It's not Fission.
I don't think it's free. I think he said the price was similar to Audio Hijack Pro or something.
Is it Fission?
No, that doesn't sound familiar.
Okay.
No. And Fission's been around for a little while anyway. So
yeah, true.
We'd always like to know about new products. So
yeah.
At some point, I'm sure we'll have to wonder about that.
So if Larry wanted more resources be able to get more information, what resources would you point him to? Because he'll probably be doing that on his Windows PC, I would imagine, for at least a little while. And what kind of resources are out there to really kind of lend him a hand?
I think the VoiceOver manual is available. It's available in Braille and text and Daisy, I think, on Greg Kearney's site, but I can't remember the URL for that.
Yeah, I don't have that offhand, Greg Kearney's website, because he's got a lot of information up there. Like, he's got, as Holly said, the VoiceOver manual in just about every format you could want.
I think you may be talking about lioncourt.com.
Oh, yeah, I think it's filing from there.
And if you go back, I've already got this stuff. If you go back on, if you look at the Twitter page for Main Menu, we have some of that information as well. And we'll try to get some of it reposted. But it's definitely out Lion there at twitter.com/mainmenu.
Lioncourt.com is definitely a good place to go for it's a good web resource to check out, because there's a lot of information. And there's links to just about any, like all the other Mac and VoiceOver related websites that are out there. He's got links to them, so that's definitely a good starting spot.
Hey, I'm going to accommodate an international caller here and add him to the conference, if you guys don't mind. He has some questions he'd like to ask about the Mac.
Sure.
His name is Hassad, and he's from Morocco.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and see about getting him on with us here. And yeah, so I guess you guys have a new product to learn about, potentially, a new audio editor.
Yeah.
Well, you never really stop learning with this stuff, so
yeah.
it's always good to try out new things.
Well, that's not going to work out right now. We'll have to try that. But sorry about that, folks.
Hey, Daryl,
okay,
we have another caller, too.
Daryl. I'm sorry, Jeff.
We have a caller, too.
Oh, bring him in.
Hold on 1 second. And he's got a little crying baby. So this should be fun on Main Menu. We're going to have the little baby come on and talk.
Cute.
Yay. All right. Another podcaster has joined us here, along with his beautiful wife and their newborn baby. And I'm sure Darcy and Holly will recognize him. Welcome.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Edward Alonzo from Arkansas. And I had heard that you guys were discussing the new sound editor that Daryl was asking about. And the name of that is Amadeus Pro. He had sent an email to one of the lists. And I've actually been looking for a good sound editor to try. I own a MacBook Pro, or not a MacBook Pro, but an iMac. And I had been looking for a good sound editor, and he had talked about this one, so I went and downloaded it, and haven't really messed around with it much, just haven't had time with our new six-month-old, but from what he said, it offers a scrubbing capability, like you said, and it's all accessible from the keyboard. He also mentioned that it offered fully accessible multi-tracking, and he said it was the first editor that he knew of that actually offered 100% accessible multi-tracking with the with the Mac. So. Like I said, I haven't messed around with any of that. I'm interested in it because I'm a musician, so
Now, do you know how much Amadeus Pro costs?
Trying to get in there and do some good multi-tracking stuff, and that's one of the reasons I got a Mac, to do a lot of the audio part of it. But that was the name of it, and I knew you guys had been trying to think of it, so I thought I'd just throw that in.
Do you know what it costs? Do you know how much it costs, Amadeus Pro costs?
But as far as the new Mac goes, I'm with Larry. I think it's one of the best machines I've ever owned. As far as being able to just pull it out of the box and literally you plug three things into it, the power, the mouse, and the keyboard, and you're ready to go.
Yep. So, yeah, how much does Amadeus Pro cost?
I'll tell you.
I don't think you can hear us.
No. Yeah.
I think he. Hold on 1 second. Okay, now he should be able to hear you now.
How much does Amadeus Pro cost?
They said it was, I believe, $40.
Okay. That's not too bad.
That's not bad.
No,
that's
not
bad. It's less than Sound Studio. So if it does everything, then that might be the way to have to take a look at Amadeus Pro.
Yeah.
Now is your podcast still going?
Yes, yeah. It is actually.
Sorry.
Sorry, guys.
all this good internet delay, you gotta love it.
Darcy and Holly, we'll get to your podcast in a minute. But all right, you want to give us your information before we let you go?
Yeah, absolutely. My podcast and my wife's podcast, we do it together. It's called the Blind Double Trouble Podcast, and you can check it out by either adding feeds.feedburner.com/BDT. That's Bravo Delta Tango to your podcatching client, or you can also go to blinddoubletrouble, all one word, .webhop.org. So, in fact, one of the last ones I actually did was my full Mac preparation. I actually recorded getting it and setting it up, and everybody really seems to like it. I got a lot of comments on it, so.
Nice.
I really was hoping that somebody would have done a podcast like that before I bought one, so when I got mine, I rushed out and did one real quick.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, I just thought
I'd throw that in, so thanks for putting me on the show.
And no problem, and thanks for calling in.
All right, you guys have a good evening.
Okay, you too.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Dan from Canada asked you guys if you know anything about the Apple TV and how does that relate to the Mac line, and is it accessible, and what is it, and all that.
It's not accessible.
Last we've heard. Basically, what it is it's a box that you hook up to your TV. I think you need an HDTV for it, and you can do things like a lot of what you can do in iTunes. Like you can buy music on it, you can buy movies, you can watch, you know, video podcasts, that sort of thing. So it's just a way of kind of making that more convenient for the, you know, people who maybe want to use all the features of iTunes, but maybe don't want to necessarily use a computer to do it. So at last we heard, it's not accessible. It is based on OS X, so I'm sure it could be made accessible. There's no reason why it couldn't. But last we've heard, that's not happened, which is unfortunate. So that's. And it uses, I believe it uses the standard Apple remote that you get with, your regular Mac laptops, like which basically kind of looks like an iPod Shuffle a little bit, like one of the older iPod Shuffles. So it's probably not something that, at least for the time being, that you really need to worry about getting. Although,
yeah.
Like I said, it would be nice if we had access to it.
Chris is asking, so for example, if I'm in Safari and I want to select a link, I want to locate and select a link on a web page, how would I go about it? He said, I know on a Windows PC I press tab and then I press enter, and I'm sure it doesn't work that way on the Mac.
Well, you can actually use tab and enter to move between links, just like you do in Windows.
You can bring up a linked list.
You can use the voiceover and the arrow keys to move through a page. You can do.
And what's really cool too with the links list is if you know like how it's spelled. If you start typing in the letters, it starts narrowing down the list to just the words that contain those letters. So you can get it pretty quickly like that too.
Right. So, yeah, you got the links list. You can use the arrow keys. There's a bunch of different ways to do it.
You can use the arrow keys, and you can use tab and enter.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different ways. What really makes it different is the fact that you have things, or things can be in columns. Really, that's the big difference. I mean, you can still do things like go to headings, go to the next visited link, such, you know, things like that. So yeah, you can still do that. You can still to answer his question.
Welcome aboard, Hassad from Morocco. Good evening or good morning there.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Hi. What was your question for the show, sir?
Okay. Let me tell you. I am. This is Hassan from Morocco. And I'm using JAWS. And the problem is that I'm planning to buy a laptop computer, and they all come with Vista already installed. And I am using version 8 of JAWS. So I don't think it will be compatible with Vista. So are there any problems running JAWS on Vista?
Okay, well, if you want to run JAWS on Vista, it will work with JAWS 8, but version 9 of JAWS works a lot better. You said you are considering getting a laptop. Are you just looking at PCs,
yeah,
or are you looking at Macs as well?
I'm in the process of buying a laptop computer, negotiating, checking the prices, and I think I am dealing with the company, and I think I'm ready to go. But I think I will just tell them to, I don't know, tell me if that would be the right option, because I'm going to tell them to check off Vista and put on XP Professional.
Right. Okay, well, yeah, so we know that JAWS 8.0 can run on Vista. But JAWS 9.0 definitely runs quite a bit better. There are a lot of significant enhancements. So if you get a Vista computer, you're looking at a JAWS upgrade. Or, of course, you could consider switching to a Mac. Couldn't you?
Yes, definitely.
And the other thing you can do is you can buy a laptop from Dell, for example, and they'll still put XP on the. On the laptop.
You know, it's hard to get them, though. It's getting harder. I think Dell is making some exceptions, but you may, with some of these companies, you may need to you may need to acquire it from their business division, for instance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to tell you something here. All right. I went to, even with the version 9, I went to online. Checking out like the information, and there is a blog or chat rooms where visually impaired people post their comments and give their feedback about the screen reader, and they were talking about JAWS, some JAWS compatibility issues, and most of them are not satisfied with version 9 because they said maybe they need maybe better upgrade. And
well, that's always the case with any software.
Well, I think these issues, are concerns that you may have. You need to address specifically to Freedom Scientific if you're concerned about any.
Or get on one of the one of the mailing lists that are in the blind community, like the JFW list or the blind tech list or something like that.
Exactly.
For example, Hassad, a good maybe general site that you may want to look at to find out about those mailing lists and resources could be blind-geek-zone.net. That would be an example of a website you might want to go to, and he has a link there where you can find out about some of the technology or any mailing lists. Get on them, and then ask your questions on the appropriate lists, and there'll be lots of people who can answer your technical queries there. Good.
So what's still happening?
Okay, so we're going to let you go now, so
we're going to let you go, so we can take other calls, Hassad. But it was nice to meet you here on Main Menu Live.
Okay, that's one. Is this a radio show?
It is.
It is. Yes, it's heard on acbradio.org on the mainstream channel.
Okay, can I please give me what's your schedule? What time do you host
the schedule is posted on the website, but Main Menu is heard from...
At 0100 Universal on Wednesdays.
1 to 3 Universal on Wednesdays. That's 6 to 8, or 5 to 7. I get stuck on my time. 5 to 7 Pacific. And
so on. It's 0100 Universal.
8 to 10 Eastern. Okay.
All right, Hassad. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for answering my questions.
You're very welcome.
You're welcome.
Bye
Have
for
a good
now.
Night. Bye-bye. All right. So going back to Larry here, because we just want to make sure that Larry has everything now. Mac Visionaries is still up and running.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, the Mac Visionaries list is still there. Good. And of course, you can always email us. I'm thinking that he might have emailed us recently, because I got an email from someone named Larry the other day, and I think it's possible that it might have been him. But if it wasn't him, and he wants to email us, of course he can at our email address that we use for our Mac-related stuff is show@screenlessswitchers.com, and we'll help in any way we can. And I think with the links we mentioned before, I don't think he'll have much difficulty. Like I think if he's really interested in learning it and everything, I think he'll do just fine. You just a little bit of patience. Have to remember that things aren't quite the same as what you used to, and go from there, I guess. So,
we have another caller, it's Danny, and yet another Mac guy. Hey, Danny.
Hey there. Got a quickie question. I'll listen off the air. About the only I can't afford a modern day Mac to have, virtual, an Intel-based Mac. So I'm going to have to get another Windows machine because I love SA Mobile content. If I just want a Windows machine to enjoy that, am I better off going with XP or with Vista, and why? Thank you.
Oh, boy. Well, let's see.
Wow, that's a nice can of worms. And we're on the Mac topic.
Interesting. Well, listen, I think we can sum it up this way. And again, this is just our opinions, but if you can get your hands on XP, I would do that.
Yeah.
If you can't, both WindowEyes and JAWS for Windows, and HAL for that matter, support Vista. So,
and System Access.
And of course, System Access support Vista. So, it's and as long as you're buying brand new hardware, you probably will be okay going Vista. However, if you're wanting to buy, a really simple desktop or something like that, and you can get it from Dell or another, vendor, and they can provide you XP, then that's what I would do. But that's just.
And if you're going to get, and what I'll also say is, if you are going to go the Vista route, make sure you have the latest version of your particular screen reader.
Yes, that's right. And make sure that you get the appropriate version of Vista, at least with JAWS anyway. That if you're running, home edition of JAWS, then you're going to need to make sure you get the right version of
Vista. I'd have to imagine, though, that if you're going to buy new hardware and if you have to buy an updated screen reader, you probably would be cheaper to get one of the Intel-based Macs, and then you could, you could do the same thing. You could run Windows.
Right.
And I mean, just run
exactly.
Windows. Run yeah. Windows, get, one of the demos of the screen reader, and as long as you don't think you'll be using it for more than 40 minutes at a time, you're...
Hey, but
here's an idea, and this is just... I'm just pursuing this as a matter of fact, not anything else.
I'm going. Go ahead.
If somebody has I don't know if you guys are running VMware Fusion or not, but if you reboot the virtual machine, does it reboot the 40 minutes, or do you have to reboot the Mac side of your system?
I would think so, because I mean, as far as I know, any programs running inside the virtual machine are concerned, Windows has been restarted.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
But I would expect so. I mean, I'd love to know, because that's probably what I will do, honestly. Because there are, you know, a few times that I want Windows for things, and I'm sure I could manage it in less than 40-minute increments.
we'll let you do some testing, and when you come on next time, you can tell us.
There you go.
Yes.
But I would be surprised if it didn't work that way, honestly. Because, you know, like I said, people, I think in just about every other respect, when you reboot the virtual machine, you know, Windows has restarted, so. Mm-hmm.
It's just like rebooting your PC from the ground up.
Absolutely,
yep.
Yeah.
So.
Well, guys, we're almost out of time, and we wanted to definitely talk about your podcasts and get all that contact information out there. So why don't we go ahead and let you do that.
You go ahead. Go ahead and do
okay. We have the Darcy and Holly Show, which is our general chat podcast, and it's at www.darcyandholly.com. Darcy and Holly, all one word.
Yeah.
And then we have our Mac podcast, which is the Screenless Switchers, and it's at www.screenlessswitchers.com.
And just to say again, if you want to email us with any Mac questions, we have... you can email us at show@screenlessswitchers.com. And I have to, for anyone who has emailed us over the last little while, we've kind of gotten behind in things. So there's like tomorrow, actually, I think we're going to record like basically like a mailbag show, because, you know, to cover all the questions that we've been asked over the last little while. So if you did email us, then we haven't written you back, then, you know, check our latest podcast and we will answer your questions. And then, of course, you can ask us further questions and whatnot. So, that's how you, in a nutshell, how you get hold of us.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And what kind of stuff have you had on your Mac podcast lately? What have you been doing there?
Well, we haven't really done one for a few weeks. The last one we did when Macworld happened back in January. We did do a thing that night. You know, comment. We had Josh DeLinecourt on from the linecourt.com website, and we talked all about the you know, what the, you know, Steve Jobs said in his keynote, and talked all about the MacBook Air, and you know, what, like, what our thoughts were just based on what we'd heard and that sort of thing. And we haven't done any tutorials lately. We've had some ideas of things we want to do, but we haven't. Of course, we can demo anything that people want to see. So
yeah, great.
Let us know. Hopefully, I'm hoping sometime to talk to more people about GarageBand, what that's like, and if it's, because the nice thing about GarageBand, if it is accessible, is it comes with all new Macs. Like, if you buy a new Mac, you get the iLife suite anyway. So, if it does, that might be a valid option for a lot of people.
Good.
So.
All right. Well, Daryl, I think this kind of brings our show to an end here. And
I think so. Thanks for coming on with us there, Darcy and Holly. And
anytime.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. And thanks to all the listeners for being part of our show this evening.
That's
right. If you'd like to talk about topics outside this show, you can get on the Main Menu mailing list by sending an email to main-menu-subscribe@googlegroups.com.
That's right. And don't forget, next week, GW Micro comes to talk all about WindowEyes version 7 and their new scripting. We're looking definitely forward to that. Good night, Daryl. Good night, Darcy and Holly. And have a great week.
Good night, everybody.
And we'll see you next week, everybody.